Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Oi with the Terror. I'm one of your hosts, Danielle.
And I'm your other host, Sandra.
And happy post-Halloween.
Yay.
I realized we didn't say anything about Halloween in the last episode.
Oh yeah, we didn't. Well, it wasn't that close to Halloween though for us.
Yeah.
It was like still mid-October.
It's definitely spooky season.
Oh yeah.
I still consider it spooky season now. I definitely don't do immediate winter decoration things after Halloween's over.
No, I'm still one of those people that likes Thanksgiving. So I get excited for Thanksgiving. I don't go right into like Christmas.
Yeah. Do you have Thanksgiving decorations you put up?
Not really.
I feel like that's not a thing.
No.
There's like fall decorations, Halloween decorations. Actually, my mom does use like a turkey centerpiece, one of those paper things, like for Thanksgiving lunch, dinner.
Yeah. I don't think we've ever done Thanksgiving decorations. Maybe we've done like fall theme.
Right.
Fall colors.
And there happens to be a turkey.
Yeah. Or like one of those things, gourds.
Yeah.
Things like we used to use, like.
Yeah, I would consider that like a fall autumnal, like, theme.
Yeah, but no. I don't really even have, like, Christmas decorations. Like, last year, because I got COVID at Christmas, I bought myself, like, a little tree, like, a little plastic tree, just to have something. But, yeah, I need
to, like.
Have a little
star on it.
Well. Not a star. It has decorations on it. It's got like little fake like tinsel and like ornaments and stuff.
Does it light up?
No. Oh. No, I couldn't get one in time. But for my Halloween party, I did put cobwebs on it and spiders on it.
That's to like festive.
Incorporate into like the Halloween, you know. I had to use it somehow.
I have seen that, like a Halloween tree. Yeah.
Yeah. They're there. They're spooky. They can be.
It's definitely pagan. Mm-hmm. I, for some reason, started rewatching Charmed again. I consider it's like a classic 90s-y, 2000s-y. Like, I never got into Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but I was always in Charmed for some reason. Charmed's on Amazon Prime.
Charmed's good, though. I tried to get into Buffy, but that wasn't until, like, a few years ago, and I think it was just, bless you, it was just too late. Like, I couldn't get over the weird makeup that they'd use, and I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah, I don't, yeah. Like, I like the character, like, the Buffy character, but then there's, like, the whole demonology thing never interested me. I don't know. And, like, you could tell, like, it was very, like, even though the main character was a female, I felt like it was a very male-heavy cast in general. And Charmed, it was like three women. And they were kind of leading the cause. Buffy was always kind of, I felt like, manipulated or kind of like told what to do by the strong male guys. And Charmed, it was like the three females and like the male lackeys on the side more.
Yeah,
I think they may have had the same producer, actually, both shows.
It wouldn't surprise me since they were out around the same time.
The same, yeah.
I recently kind of got back into, like, Ghost Whisperer. I don't know if you watched that. It has Jennifer Love Hewitt in it, and it's from, like, the early 2000s. But she's like, a regular woman that owns, like, an antique shop, but she can see spirits. So, like, every episode, she's, like, trying to help a spirit get, like, closure to be able to move on.
Oh, I feel like I've never heard of that.
It's actually pretty good.
From the 90s, too?
I think it's from, like, 2003, 2004? It's on Hulu, if anybody wants to go and relive some good early 2000s nostalgia.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's pretty good.
Okay.
And there's like five seasons, I think. Four or five. So it ran for a while.
So I guess I could start getting into my topic.
Yeah.
So I was recently in Savannah for my friend's wedding. And we did a ghost pub crawl tour one of the nights. And it was a lot of fun because, like, we stopped at a few different pubs that were, like, older and had some kind of, like, spooky history to it. But it definitely wasn't, like, the maybe best ghost tour I've been on. But it was, like, fun overall, I guess. Like, we did walk around to some older sites, like, as we were walking from pub to pub. I just wish we had, like, seen more places, especially, like, being in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't go there very often. I definitely want to go back. It's, like, so pretty and, like, has, like, the old cobblestones and definitely has, like, a different vibe than, like, anywhere in New England. So I definitely want to go back and maybe I'll try to, like, do a different kind of ghost tour next time. But it, like, inspired me to try to find a topic that based in Savannah for this episode. I might actually do a few Savannah-based ones, like, back-to-back. Because when I was looking it up, I found, like, two or three that sounded interesting. So this one I don't think was mentioned on the tour, but it takes place in a well-known house in the downtown district of Savannah, which is, like, where we were walking around on the tour. And it is the... technically has two different names. So this murder took place in 81 in the Mercer House, but it's also known as the shooting of Danny Hansford. So the house is currently owned by Jim Williams's sister, Dorothy Kinnergy, who runs it as a museum, and the house is located at 429 Bull Street on Monterey Square in Savannah, Georgia. The house was designed for General Hugh Weedon Mercer by architect John S. Norris. Norris was New York born and raised, but came to Savannah where he enjoyed success in building houses, churches, and lighthouses throughout the area. In 1860, ground was broken on the Mercer property, but construction was halted due to the Civil War. As for Norris himself, he quickly moved back to New York just before the war began. No member of the Mercer family lived in the home. Confederate General Hugh Weedon Mercer was unable to finish his dream home, and the house was completed around 1868 by its new owner, John Wilder. And then the house is occupied by Savannah's Shriner Ali Temple. Then the house was vacant for 10 years. And then the next owner was Jim Williams, who took ownership in 1969. Williams was a well-known person in Savannah. He was known as an eccentric antiques dealer and preservationist who was infatuated with Savannah's colorful history and architecture. He often bought and restored houses around Savannah, so he was, like, a well-known person in the community. Over the course of 35 years, he bought and restored over 50 houses. And one of those houses was the Mercer Williams House. He spent 2 years restoring the house and was so pleased with the outcome that he decided to make it his permanent residence. There was a carriage house in the back that he used for his antique restoration business. He was known for throwing wild and extravagant parties, comparable to parties from the Great Gatsby, apparently. But the good times came to an abrupt halt in 1981 when his assistant and lover, Danny Hansford, a former prostitute, was shot and killed in the home during a party. Danny was described by the Washington Examiner as a, quote, redneck hustler. He was born in Savannah in 1960, and he began a relationship with Williams in semi-secret, and it was known to be a fiery one. They would frequently quarrel, and Danny was known for his outbursts. In the early hours of May 2nd, 1981, Jim called the police to say he had shot his assistant. When officers arrived at the Mercer house, they found Danny lying face down in the study with a handgun underneath his right hand. He had bullet wounds in his chest, back, and above his right ear. Williams was charged with Hansford's murder and was tried 4 times for the crime. It was initially suspected that Williams was charged because he was a gay man, but the judgment was overturned due to contradicting police reports, and Williams was eventually found not guilty. 6 months after the not guilty verdict, Williams was suffering from pneumonia and ended up dying from heart failure. And apparently he collapsed in the same spot where Hansford was shot dead. In the years that followed, no one else was charged with the murder of Danny Lewis Hansford. But Danny's death wasn't the only one to take place in the Mercer Williams house. In 1969, a boy named Tommy Downs, 11 years old, entered at the time the abandoned home, supposedly to chase birds. But somehow the boy fell from either the roof of the house or the second story balcony. And in a horrific turn of events, not only did he fall, he ended up landing on the wrought iron fence and was impaled by the spike tops. Not everyone was convinced that he suddenly fell, and some think that he was actually pushed. But there was no evidence to prove anything other than it being a tragic accident. But later one of Tommy's friends claimed he saw the whole thing and said that someone or something had pushed him. Basically, two people for sure ended up dying in the house, and I found it interesting that, like, the biggest murder, it sounds like, known in Savannah took place at this old house in the 80s, and it sounds like it's now a museum, so if anyone's in Savannah, they can go check it out, the Mercer Williams house. But yeah, so as an added thing, Judge George Edward Oliver, who presided over the Williams trials, says apparently was absolutely certain that Jim Williams was guilty of cold-blooded murder. But then he also added that he doesn't blame him because the boy he shot, Danny, was trouble with a capital T. And after the murder, Savannah's opinion of Jim Williams continued to vary from either eccentric antiques collector who loved to throw parties to deranged murderer. So, and then the fact that he ends up dying like 6 months after.
I think I remember this house. I went to Savannah like when I was a teenager, and this, like, the name Mercer does sound really familiar. But I didn't know
about the murder.
Apparently not. Apparently not, no. Also,
Savannah has a lot of interesting, like, houses. Like, it's so much fun to just walk around and look.
Savannah just has, like, a very interesting history when you look at it. Like, I feel like a lot of shit went down in Savannah over time.
So many secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look up the Mercer house, it is interesting. It's like a brick house with balconies. And yeah, the wrought iron fence.
Yeah, but it kind of looks like a kind of like a weird classic southern house in a way. Like, you would expect to see that in Savannah, not so much like in Massachusetts.
I think I heard also that this was mentioned in an episode of Southern Gothic, the show. I think it's on Investigation Discovery.
I can see that, yeah.
So, yeah, that's the story of the Mercer Williams shooting.
Crazy. Also, I feel really bad for that boy that either fell or was pushed.
Yeah, so. Getting impaled is maybe the worst way to die. It's bad.
One of the worst ways, yeah.
Thank you.
guessing that you, I don't know if you've heard of this one. I know you sent me a few ones like over the last few days, and I'll definitely do them. So I picked the Martha Washington School for Girls out in Washington State. Does that sound familiar? Like, have you heard of it?
I don't think so.
Okay. Not surprised, because I haven't really heard of it until, like, I found it by accident. So the Martha Washington School for Girls provided a residential supervision for delinquent girls. It was first located on Queen Anne Hill, and then it moved over to Mercer Island. Its final property was back to Seattle in 1914. And it was originally owned by juvenile court judge Everett T. Smith. I guess he owned it from 1862 to 1933. Then the state of Washington assumed control over the school in 1957, when it operated until 1971, and then it was finally closed. And it is now the Martha Washington Park. So you can go and you can kind of see it. You won't really see the school there anymore because it's been torn down, and it's now one of the local parks. In 1957, the state of Washington, as I said, assumed control until 1971. It was then sold to the city of Seattle in 1972. And I guess during that time, because it was a school for delinquent girls, there was kind of a lot of not great things that went on. There was a lot of abuse. There was a lot of pain for the girls. And it wasn't, you know, kind of known as a very happy place. Which might explain kind of why it has the reputation that it does now. So once it was closed in 1971, there was rumors that in 1972, while the school building was still standing and it was boarded up, that a group of Satanists began using the place for various ceremonies, some which included animal sacrifices. The Seattle residents were not thrilled about this, and they complained about this until eventually they petitioned the local city council, who finally tore the building down. There was also rumors there have been a serial killer janitor sometime in the 1950s. Apparently, one of the school janitors went on what someone referred to as a murder spree. He assaulted and killed several students, as well as a few of the staff members. And he did this by hanging the bodies of the former on the madrone tree after strangling them to death. There was also, I guess, some evidence of the school also being built on a Native American burial ground. So centuries earlier, Native American tribes resided on the land that had become the site of the school. This is the area where they would camp and they would fish and they would train warriors. But where the caretaker's hut was built was originally a sacred burial ground. So while building the Smith residence and later the school buildings, the European workmen were either not aware or they did not care and were not very respectful to the cemetery, and they disturbed most of the remains. There have been visiting mediums that have attested that it angered the Native American spirits, who then possibly drove the caretaker insane, drove him to drink heavily, be generally angry, and even abuse and assault the schoolgirls, which just kind of back up other evidence I found where there were people saying that these girls, again, because it was a delinquent school, they weren't generally taken care of in the best way. So Lost in the Shuffle as an average rentable property from where the pair lost the lease in 1985. It was rescued with obscurity in 1992 by Ida Cole of the Seattle Landmark Association, which then became the Seattle Theater Group, STG, in 1999. STG operates the theater to this day and leases it from the current owners. So that is why if you go and you do visit that area, you might have some paranormal events. Some of these paranormal park events include hearing disembodied sobbing and other sounds of a young woman echoing across the property. There are rows of floating balls of light, and there are gusts of winds from nowhere that are frequently seen and felt at night. People have seen a transparent young girl in a nightgown among the trees. Allegedly, she likes to walk along with groups, especially those with odd numbers. She and the spirits of other girls are said to appear and comfort the troubled young living girls and to give kind of a good scare to anyone that's kind of bullying them. There even have been instances of during the day where you might get pushed into the lake by the ghost of the caretaker if he decides he doesn't like you. People have had the feelings of being touched, being touched on their shoulders, or hearing the sounds of footsteps as well as spirits just showing up in their photography that's taken there. And the Madrone tree, which is still there, is also a hot spot with a lot of this local paranormal activity. So that is the story of the Martha Washington School for Girls, which is unfortunate.
So, how'd you hear about it?
I think I was just like Googling, and I think I picked Seattle because I was like, I haven't really done Seattle in a while, and then that kind of popped up. So I thought it was kind of interesting and sad, but I think I've heard about the park when I would visit like my mom in Seattle, but I've never been. So maybe next time I'll go and see for myself. Because I will be going there next year, so.
Yeah, it definitely has a dark history.
Yeah, I think when I was doing the research, the thing that struck out to me was the serial killer janitor. That was kind of a little bit, like, the Native American burial ground, I can kind of understand, because, like, you know, we've built a lot on Native American burial grounds, so, like, that's not as shocking. But just the serial killer, like, janitor was like, oh, that's terrifying. Especially because, like, if it's a school for delinquent girls, like, they've already kind of been through a lot. Yeah. So just to, like, have them having to deal with that.
Oh, that's dark.
Is dark. And you think it's like, oh, it's a school. Like, they'll be fine.
Wow. I could definitely see that as, like, a show or a movie. Mm-hmm. The whole concept.
Yep. I'm sure. Sure it has been. I'm sure there are some shows out there that have, like, had a similar use like that, but I don't know. It was just one of those things where it's like, oh, this is interesting. And not, I mean, really, like
Ghost Hunter episodes, they definitely have school ones or like college ones too, where people were murdered and bad things happened. And
yeah, and if anybody out there has Roku, they're in likes Ghost Hunters, there's an entire channel dedicated to just Ghost Hunters, which I found over the weekend. Schools. Not at schools, just like episodes. Yeah. But I did watch an episode the other day where they were like investigating a library. So, and someone's house. So like, I forgot that like they do like not just do like the big
famous. Is this a newer episode?
No, it's all reruns.
Oh, okay.
They just like rerun like all the old episodes. It's just a channel dedicated to Ghost Hunters.
Oh, wow.
So I've been watching a lot of Ghost Hunters this week.
We'll probably be watching more Charmed later. Mm-hmm. Charmed. We're so nostalgic.
Yeah.
And we might be going or seeing Boy Meets World or whatever on Friday.
Yay.
Santa roped me into this.
I asked nicely and you were like, sure. But yeah, very nostalgic. Oddly enough, for, you know, but I feel like nostalgia is very normal right now. Everyone I've talked to has, like, been super nostalgic, so it's not just us.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Oi with the Terror. We are now releasing a new episode every other Thursday. You can find us on Instagram at Oi with the Terror Podcast. You can also find us on Facebook at Oi with the Terror Already Podcast. And if you have anything that you want us to discuss or research or anything that you want us to, you know, if you have ghost stories of your own, you can email us at oiwiththeterroralready@gmail.com. And we will see you all soon.
Bye.